Okay, this is the West Coast School of the Prophets, 2009. We have our brother Roger Lewis speaking to the theme, How to Guard the Heritage of Bible Truth. This is session number 7, How to Select and Research Bible Study Topics. Brother Roger.
Well, good morning, all.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Very well.
Good. I'm pleased. I'm pleased to hear that. Our studies this day are, in a sense, a little more hands-on as far as you're concerned, although it was probably a bit like that yesterday, because today we're going to very much talk about really the construction of Bible studies. And as you'll see from the topics today, we're going to look firstly at how to select and research Bible study topics itself or themselves. Then after our morning break, we're going to look at how to develop and organise Bible study themes. And then in both our afternoon and first evening sessions, we're going to look at how to construct and present powerful Bible addresses. Because one of the issues here, as we said the other day, is it's one thing to actually gather material together, it's quite another to learn how to present it effectively to other people. And of course, at the end of the day, if we're going to present effectively to other people, we've got to learn, I think, a different set of skills compared to merely the skills that we might have of studying the Bible for ourselves. One of the things, of course, that emerges from that is that people, unfortunately, don't know how your brain works, how your thinking process works, or how my thinking process works. And so often something that we think is perfectly logical in terms of our thought process is bewilderingly incomprehensible to other people because they don't think like you. So in terms of learning, especially, I think, presentation skills, we've got to really develop those and train ourselves in those and practice them over a period of time. The good thing about this is that practice makes perfect, I think, in this context. The more we practice certain key things, the more we will become capable of gathering our material together and presenting it effectively. So we're going to talk this morning about how to select and research topics. Now, most of you were here. Who wasn't here last year? I know that Josh and... So, okay, well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. We can organise this, I think, Jim, can't we? Is that we gave a handout last year, which I sent through in email form. I think they got out in terms of those study lists. Did you get those? Did you get Series 1 and Series 2 and Series 3? So you should have got three series. So for those of you that weren't here last year, we'll make sure that you get a copy of that sent to you pretty much as soon as you get home. And that study series basically covers in each of those sheets some ideas from all the books of the Bible in terms of study topics, and also in terms of word studies, thematic studies, prophecy studies, character studies, and doctrinal studies. It suggests some topics in those areas as well. So Series 1 is 80 studies, Series 2 is 80 studies, Series 3 is 80 studies, so there's 240 study topics on those sheets when you get them of things you could possibly study. And they're just a few of the things that I've put down in all of those areas that I think are interesting, things that I either have studied or would like to study. There's piles more than that, of course. It's just the first 240 to get you going. But the idea behind that is that no one should suffer from the problem of saying, look, I don't really know what I might study. By at least having a list with lots and lots of ideas, that list is not supposed to daunt you. It's not supposed to make you think, oh, I could never do all this. We don't ever study everything at once. We study things one topic at a time. But the joy of that is if you think, oh, I like the look of that, and I like that, and that looks interesting. Well, that's great. Well, what you need to do is set some limited objectives. And so one of the things that I do, and we're just talking here about selection of topics, One of the rules that I have had is Old Testament, New Testament, Old Testament, New Testament. So that's the first thing, is it's a good idea to vary our personal study topics between the Old and the New Testaments, simply so that we're making sure that we traverse the length and breadth of Scripture. The other thing that I've tried to do is to, as we mentioned in those studies last year, is to make sure that we're doing different types of study. So if we've done a word study, our next study shouldn't be another word study. It should be a thematic study, or it should be a character study, or it should be a doctrinal study or whatever. But we try and move around those different types of studies as well, so that we become familiar with those different types of studies, because they're all different. And if you remember last year, I think I had some slides to show what the main benefits are of a thematic study as opposed to a doctrinal study, as opposed to a prophetical study, as opposed to a word study, that all of those different types of studies bring their own special benefits to our growth in spiritual knowledge and understanding. So in terms of how to select Bible topics for study, I don't think I want to say a lot more than that, because there's plenty to study. There should be no shortage. If you've got those lists and you weren't able to think of something, I think you'll find something on the list that will intrigue you or interest you and think, yep, I'd like to have a look at that. The only other thing I did mention, as I recall last year, concerning researching Bible study topics, or selecting them rather, was to probably start at the right end of the book. So don't start with Revelation. Don't start with the second of Chronicles. Don't start with the book of Isaiah, where there's lots and lots of chapters and lots of details. Start with some more basic things. If you're going to do a word study, start off with a small word study. If you're going to do a minor prophet, start off with a small minor prophet, or a psalm, or maybe the first two or three chapters of the book of Genesis, which of course would be an excellent start, wouldn't it, for... You know, it never ceases to amaze me how much stuff is in Genesis 1 to 3. And how many other things will develop into the biblical record out of Genesis 1 to 3. So to me, that's got to be one of the very best studies that any of us could do as we start our Bible study programs. To have made sure that somewhere fairly early on in the piece, we've had a good look at Genesis 1 to 3 and marked it up, is, I think, a very good start, because so many other themes and ideas in the Bible record will come out of the Genesis record. So the next thing I wanted to talk about was how to research. Now, when I grew up, technology wasn't quite so available, as I mentioned the other day, and so we were very much focused on books, so we accumulated libraries. I still think having a library is a good idea. To me, there's nothing that quite beats the feel of a book and the crispness of the paper and the spin of the pages through the hand. And there's something tactile about studying using books that's different to a screen. So I don't think that, and interestingly enough, if you speak to printers, they're printing more stuff now than they've ever printed before. So despite the fact that technology is saying you'll do it all electronically, there's something about the physical handling of a book that's comforting and interesting and enjoyable, as a completely different sensation to screen research. So I still think you should build your study libraries and endeavour to get resource books. And that's a work of time and a work of process. One of the things I'd like to mention in that regard is, I remember a young brother once in our ecclesia, and I can't remember what the book was, but let's say it was... there's a book that's come out recently on John the Baptist, hasn't there, by, is it Mark Alfrey? So John the Baptist. And let's say it was that book. So this particular book had arrived on our library bookshelf in the ecclesial library, and the young brother said, oh, I don't think I'll buy that because I'm not studying John the Baptist at the moment. Hello? Do you ever think you might one day study John the Baptist at any stage in your mortal life? You don't buy books based on what you're studying at the moment. You buy books based on anything you could ever think you might ever want to possibly study. Ever, ever, ever. Which means you buy everything. Because one day you might want to study it. So remember my rule from yesterday? What was my rule? That on any Bible subject or any Bible passage, what can I produce? 7 books on the topic, on any subject, out of my library. That's a tremendous start in terms of Bible research. So when we talk about researching, one of the critical things is you've got to have research tools. If you haven't got research tools, you're going to be bereft of a lot of very helpful information that will advance your Bible study. So let's start with the beginning, and that is, Strong's Concordance. Most of us know how to use Strong's and Englishman's and so on and so forth. One of the benefits, I guess, of online Bible and eSword is that it pretty much puts all that together now in electronic form. So who's got online Bible? Who's got online Bible? This is a matter of interest. Who uses online Bible? 1, 2, 3, 4. Who uses online Bible amongst other things? Yeah. All right, so quite a few people have got. Who's got eSword? Okay, what do you tend to use the most? eSword? Okay. Is there an Apple version for eSword?
No.
Okay. Which is why I use online Bibles, so. Yeah. I suppose to a certain extent it doesn't matter. Because they're all pretty fundamental in terms of their researchability.
Libronix just released a Mac version.
Yeah, I'll talk to you about that in a minute. I'm gonna walk you through Libronix. So, hands up those that have got Libronix. Okay, hands up those that use Libronix. Okay, so we'll talk about Libronix this morning. I was just going to put a couple of Libronix things up on screen because. I think that's a great idea, but Libronix is one step forward from where I want to talk about now. The first thing is online Bible and eSword is basically our lexicons, isn't it? So this is our Greek and Hebrew stuff. This is our other translation stuff. So this is textual study. This is all about textual study. So I think having that resource is helpful. And in fact, I must say that today I would tend to use online Bible for the use of translations and looking up words probably more than I would now using my physical books. Why would that be? What's the main benefit, do you think, why you'd
use... Yeah, it's speed. Yeah,
speed is because you can open up a bunch of translations and go da-da-da-da-da, and then they all are, simultaneously with the text. It's difficult to have all that spread out on your table. And the second thing is that if you want to look up, for example... this word in the English, and you highlight it, click on what the word is, and then online Bible says, do you want to search that word in the Hebrew? That's effectively giving me Englishman's, isn't it? Every time that Hebrew word is used, and I say, yes, thanks, click, and up it comes, and now I'm effectively gone from Strong's to Englishman's. I'm looking at every time that Hebrew word is used, but it's the speed of that is very helpful. One of the things I remember thinking about when all this electronic stuff first started coming out was I really didn't like the idea of people doing computer study for Bible study. Because to me it seemed like wrong. You know, you can't do Bible study by means of computers. Well, the answer is you can, but you need to remember this. And you'll all know this, but it's important to realize this. Computers can't think spiritual thoughts. Computers are never going to do your meditation work for you. They're never going to do the thinking for you. They can provide the basic research, but that's all it is. It's fundamental research. And that's only the very first step of Bible study, which is find the facts. The facts include the translation. The facts include the Hebrew word. The facts include the text. The facts include marginal cross-references. Well, our research tools, such as online Bible and eSword, are going to get us to that fact stage, but they're never going to get us to divine principles. And they're certainly not going to get us to the exhortational stage of our Bible study. We only are going to be able to do that by means of meditation and thought. And in fact, when I figured that out, I felt very comforted because I realized that computers are never going to make Bible students. You can't become a Bible student merely because you've got a computer program. All that does is give you the factual details. That still doesn't make you a competent Bible student and Bible scholar. Only when you start thinking about the contextual matters do we start to move into the realm of proper Bible scholarship. So, first thing, if you haven't got eSword or online Bible, but you do have a computer, that's probably a good thing to make sure you get one of those. They're pretty simple to navigate around, aren't they? And it's a funny thing, we tend to default to what we're comfortable with, aren't we? Once you're comfortable with e-sword, if that's what you use, you tend to use it because, well, you know how to use it. And because you know how to use it, well, you do it. Well, that's great. That's all you need it for. That's what you're using it for, and so no problems. I don't know, by the way, is there any fundamental difference between e-sword and online Bible in terms of things that one does that the other absolutely doesn't or can't? I would have thought that they're both fairly similar. You can download extra translations on either, I presume, and so on and so forth. So, yeah. Okay, so that's good. So that's the first study, is just the first level of our research capability, is just our ability to do lexicographical work and textual work. The next layer up from that is the really interesting stuff, and that is where we start to get into the realm of wanting to delve into articles and other subject matter that's been written on the topic. And now we're moving from text to context, to the contextual flow of the passage. So for those that haven't seen Libronix before, I just thought that I'd put something up on screen here in terms of the benefit. And I think there's a huge benefit to Libronix. And that's this.
Real quick, does anybody have a drive in the Nissan Altima gray?
Okay, so I don't know if you can see this. Let me just go like that. Right, so here we've got Libronix. You probably know. Let me just take that off for a moment. You will probably know that that Libronix is put out by Logos Software, and you'll probably know that Logos Software has got nothing to do with the Logos magazine in Australia. Logos is an American group, and one of the things that you'll find when you open up Logos Bible Software or Libronix via Logos is they're into making money. They're using religion as a money-making venture. It sounds good, but it's actually all about making money at the end of the day. And so if you've got Logos Bible Software to run your Libronix, I'm sure yours will be the same as mine, is that what tends to happen is up here, every time you open it, it says, oh yeah, this is available for sale, 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 and you get about three or four offers before you can click off all of those and just get onto using the jolly thing. Do you have that? Is that what happens when you open it up?
It's so, emails once a week too.
Yep, so they're into making money. Now, of course, occasionally they're going to have some good stuff. A lot of it's the sort of stuff that we wouldn't want to download, but occasionally there's good stuff. I was very tempted about 2 weeks ago, and in the end I resisted and decided no, but it's tucked away at the back of my mind, and it'll niggle away now for a while. But they had a deal for, I think, $240 US that gave you the entire Tyndale Bible series. Now, I don't know if you've seen the Tyndale series, but they're a separate book on each book of the Bible. The Tyndale Bible Commentaries, they're called. They were sort of bright green for Old Testament and sort of buff for New Testament. What's good about Tyndale is it's a publication by IVP. Anyone know what IVP is? It's short for InterVarsity Press. InterVarsity Press are renowned for the fact that they tend to be conservative in their Bible scholarship, and most of the authors in the Tyndale series are people that believe in the inspiration of the Scripture and in the supremacy of God. So you're starting from a base of people that are at least, you know, committed to the inspiration of the Scriptures like we are. So you tend to get better quality stuff in something like the Tyndale series. Even then, it's patchy depending on the writer. But to think that for $250 you could have the whole Tyndale series downloaded to your Bible was, for me, very tempting. That's huge. So from time to time, there'll be good offers. So under Logos, you can have a passage guide or an exegetical guide, which I've never used and I don't know about, Bible commentary and Bible only and so on and so forth. So one of the things you've got to know about with regard to using this is if I call up something, for example, I put up here that we want to have a search on Genesis 3:24. If I do that search, just done that way, What it will do is it will start to search over here and say, okay, let's, and here's the searching going on here. And at the end of the search, it says, sorry, no results, no occurrences. And you think, that's odd, because what we've got down, does anyone know what the Christadelphians have loaded onto Libronix? What do we have on Libronix that we're using Libronix for? So just remember that Libronix is the name of an operating system that Logos Bible software offer to run all sorts of stuff that you can research. But we just happen as a community to have some stuff that we've downloaded onto Libronix. So what have we got? Christadelphian magazine up to the year 2000. And what else have we got? That was the first CD, wasn't it? Libronix. The first Christadelphian CD was the magazine. And then CD 2 is Christadelphian Works, which is Elpis Israel, Eureka, Nazareth Revisited, Temple of Ezekiel's Prophecy, a whole bunch of other Christadelphian writings under CD 2. So
CD 1 was King James Bible, Elpis Israel, and all of that. CD 2 just had more books, and there's a whole other CD series for the magazine.
Okay, all right. In that case, I've got it wrong. So what you're saying is that the CD magazine, the CD one for the magazine was not CD one. It was just a separate one. Okay. Okay. So there's a CD for the magazine, and then there was Christadelphian Works 1 and Christadelphian Works 2. Is that right?
And 2 had everything from 1 plus other Christadelphian books.
2 had everything from 1 as well.
Yeah.
So that's probably where I've got confused, is that I never had 1, but I got 2. So 2's got me everything that 1 had anyway. So okay, so that's good. So now I'll tell you why I love this. Right, hands up, this is confession time. Hands up those that have Googled Bible subjects. Okay. Right. Now, by the way, I have two, so my hand's up. You know, the trouble with Google, in common with most stuff, is that there is mountains of trash that you've got to wade through to find the occasional thing that might be useful. And I think that for Christadelphian Bible students, it's a really good idea to try and avoid using Google. I'm not saying you might not occasionally find something useful, but more frequently you'll find mountains of trash which you then have to read and digest and think, no, that's no good, having wasted 20 minutes looking at that, and then 20 minutes looking at the next page, and then 20 minutes looking at the next page, and after 2 hours you suddenly find you've found absolutely nothing useful whatsoever, and you've just wasted 2 hours. It was a complete waste of time. Now, why I like Libronix is, to me, what this is our own in-house Christadelphian Google. So if you think of Libronix as being our own Google site, but now what we're doing, or what are we doing now? We are Googling just Christadelphian authors. How good is that? So now every article that that's going to be thrown up on this particular Google site, if I can call it that, is going to be written by a Christadelphian. You already are miles up in terms of the quality and content of what you're likely to see by looking at this site. And the other reason I like this is, remember we spoke yesterday about the heritage of the pioneers. I think that as a community, that we have a charge that we need young brethren that are prepared to read the works of the truth and know something about them. Because we've got a new generation growing up who don't read anything in the works of the truth. They've never read any of the works of the truth. They haven't got a clue. But they're busy reading every other Christian writer under the sun, apart from Christadelphian writers. There's got to be something wrong, doesn't there, when Christadelphian communities give themselves over to the reading and study of other Christian writers and never study Christadelphian books. There's something terribly wrong when that happens. Now, why I like this is that this is going to generate a breed of Bible students in our community that are all being driven back and back and back and back to what our community wrote and what our brothers said and what our brothers thought and what our brothers have found in terms of the study of previous generations. And I think that's a fantastic idea and a fantastic resource. Now, some of you may know that the problem with that research is that we didn't put inverted commas around it. So if we put inverted commas around this now and add those at the front and the back, now it will be probably a whole lot better in terms of what it does. So now if we say search, but we've put down inverted commas, aha, bingo, it now says, actually, yes, I can find 17 occurrences of Genesis 3:24 in the Christadelphian magazine, well, in anything, during that particular search. And then, of course, we can go into those and have a look. So if we come to the first one of those articles and click on it, so I'm clicking in the corner there, and when I click, it will produce the subset beneath it, which is the Cherubim of Glory. It's volume 54, page 57, and volume 54 was 1917. Is that Robert Roberts? Probably C.C. Walker. So we've gone back to the writings now of C.C. Walker. Now, what I love about this is you've got C.C. Walker, 1940, 72, 75, 85, 86, 91, 92, 96. So you've got a whole span of the writers of the truth here going right back to Robert Roberts and Brother Thomas, right through to more recent occurrences. So if we then click on that, say, well, we'd like to see a bit about that. If we click on that, on the other side here, it's now going to call up volume 54, page 57, and actually give us that article. So now we can read that article, and it's going to thoughtfully highlight Genesis 3:24 for us so that we can see that occurring. And now, if we wanted to, we can obviously scroll up and down that particular item. So what I would tend to do, and I always do this, is I'd go back to the start of the item and just see, okay, what was that particular topic about? The Cherubim of Glory. Okay, so it's obviously something to do with a study on the cherubim, and then if I got to the bottom of it, I'd find out who the author was. And the next thing I can do, if I've scrolled down and read that and found that that was actually quite a good article and helpful for my purposes, what I would then do is open a Word document, highlight that, click save on it, or copy, and save it to a Word document. So what that's doing is now extracting that file out, putting it on a Word document, and I can then simply copy them as separate Word documents or as a series of Word additions to the one Word document. So I now have this massive Word document with every article ever done in the Christadelphian, you know, that relates to Genesis 3:24. Now that's a very powerful form of resource. If I just come back over here and click out of that one and onto the next one, I think it must be this one. Ah, bingo. Now, what does that do? So this time, when we clicked on the third occurrence, it said Cherubim and Seraphim, volume 101, volume 109, page 16, page 198, page 244, and we suddenly realised that we've just cracked open what clearly must be a whole set of articles on the cherubim and the seraphim, a set of study articles on that subject. So if in fact we were looking at Genesis 3:24 because we wanted to know about the cherubim, we've just struck the mother lode. We've just come across a whole series of articles on the cherubim by some brother, which hopefully will be useful. So we could download all of those, click and save, and we've got a whole series of articles. Would you want to read that? I'd love to read that. That's far more useful than what you're going to get the trash on Google. And if I remember rightly, that's probably the set of articles by Brother Alfred Nichols, and they were very interesting and very helpful if you wanted to know something about the cherubim. Now, if you're using your electronic system for filing, what I do is, if I just sort of minimise that for the moment and show you this on my screen, if I can do this. So over here, in my system here, I have a set of folders which I use to organise my whole life. I have financial, commercial, creative, cultural, communal, ecclesial, personal projects, physical, nutritional, spiritual, meditational, action lists and reference. And those are folders that I use to basically organise all of my work and all of my stuff. And so obviously I would be going to spiritual meditational. And so if I come to spiritual meditational, I have a set of folders in there. And one of the folders that I have, which looks to be off the side of the screen here, I have a folder under spiritual called spiritual reference. And so in that folder, I would then have inside that folder a subfolder for every book of the Bible, so that if I'm doing something in Genesis, I can chuck it into Genesis file. And then you might want to have other folders that are specific thematic studies or whatever. So I have a, you know, so you want to, you can organize that reference section any way you like. But the fact is that obviously within your computer system, you can do a pretty reasonable job of organizing how you might want to store that sort of information that you've downloaded from articles, so that you end up with, in fact, a great deal of information that you've stored usefully. So coming back to this Libronics thing, I just think that that whole idea of being able to click and search and then save documents out of the writings of the Brotherhood is a very powerful resource. And now there's a second one, which I haven't bought, but I'm about to, for the, I think it's the sum of $10 or £10. You can download the Testimony magazine. I'm not sure, it's not in Libronics format, but you can download, I think, the whole of the Testimony magazine as well. That's got to be a good resource. That's just got to be such a good resource. And in fact, this is where you do argue in favour of electronic rather than physical. Because, you see, I had at one stage, well, I still got them somewhere in storage, a lot of the files of the Christadelphian magazines, shelves of Christadelphian magazines. Now, it's terrific to have that, but if I'd ever wanted to find out, well, where does the magazine ever write about Genesis 3:24, how would you start? With the physical books. Even if you had a copy of all the magazines, how would you start? The beauty of this is you go on Genesis 3:24 and it goes, there's 17 of them. Do you want to see the first one? Boom. Just like that. So the power of being able to research via this mechanism really is the only way, don't you think? In terms of being able to go back into the writings of the truth. But when you realize that in addition to this, we don't just have the writings of the truth, the magazine, but we have other writings as well. So let's choose a topic that might pick up some of those other books. What would it be if we chose another topic?
Mystery.
Whoa. Okay. Mystery. We're up to 3,000 occurrences, 4,000, 5,000. The Christadelphians are obviously keen on mysteries. Okay, now you notice here, anastasis, 2 occurrences, atonement, brief exposition of Corinthians, catechesis. And if I scroll down to the bottom of this list, it's then got the Christadelphians. I don't know if there's anything else at the bottom, but let's have a look. And the answer is yes. So at the bottom, notice that we've also got references in Christendom Astray, Clerical Theology Unscriptural, Elpis Israel, Eureka, Exposition of Daniel, Theophany, Index Rerum, Key to Understanding, Law of Moses, Nazarene Visited, Phanerosis, Book Unsealed, Ministry of the Prophets, Temple of Ezekiel's Prophecy. That's not too bad. You've turned up a truckload of stuff here out of all the writings of the Brotherhood. This has got to be one of just the best forms of research that we have. And I'll tell you another reason why I like it. One of the other reasons why I like this is, even though that's powerful, what do you have to do to really extract the value from that? You've got to read. You've got to read and read and read. And just even to just like read and download and read and not download. So you've got to read and think, no, I won't keep that article because it's not quite on the topic I wanted. No, I won't keep that article. No, I will keep that article, but not for the study I'm doing right now. But that would be very helpful for later on. Click, save, file, spiritual reference, boof, into a file. You've got to have a great filing system, by the way, both physical and electronic. I've just read a terrific book called Getting Things Done by a guy called David Allen, who's regarded as a guru in this particular topic. getting things done. And his work has spawned a whole movement. You'll find there are websites devoted to this called How to Get Things Done. And they've developed electronic formats of the whole thing and so on. It's just a process. And as he says, his thesis on getting things done, he says, this is a highly sophisticated tool used by highly sophisticated people to get mundane stuff done. And it's actually very good. And a lot of what he says is so simple and so basic that you think, why didn't I do this before? It's so obvious. But it was so obvious we missed it. One of the things, for example, he says, and I apologize if you think this is a digression, but it's not, especially not for Christadelphians. He says, imagine you're sitting at your desk. Here's your desk. Everything needs to be within hand range. Okay? Now, what are the common things that people would have on their desk? Even a study desk. You've got your computer. There's Libronics open. You've got your Bible. What else would you normally have within range? Notepaper, pencil.
Books?
If you just ignore books for the moment, what other things would you typically have on a desk?
Printer.
Could be a printer.
Donuts and coffee.
Hey, we're in America. It's disgraceful, that's what I say.
See how your son's coming along?
It's disgraceful, yeah. I've got to get him back home fast. That's right, yeah. Jason, what were you saying?
Filing system.
Yeah, well, not a filing system, but you're getting close. You need to have the ability to file stuff. So what this guy says in his book is, he believes in manila folders. He says, get rid of all this flash stuff. It's a waste of time and money. Just manila folders. If you want to have them coloured, fine, but you don't really have to have them. Just manila folders is fine. You have a whole stack of fresh manila folders on your desk, right within reach. That's point number one. Over here, or here, it doesn't matter, you have your drop file cabinet, your four-drawer or three-drawer drop file cabinet. You've got to have it within reach so you can pull the drawer open. You've got to have the files within reach so you can grab a file. Because what tends to happen in life is it's a battle of paper. We live in a war and in a world of paper. Even though life's electronic, it's also paper. And even if you download some of this stuff and you felt that you wanted a printed copy, you've got a magazine article, you think, oh, I must copy that article. So you copy this terrific article out of a magazine, you think, where am I going to put it? And the answer is, you file it. And his rule is, you must be able to file anything within 60 seconds. That's got to be the rule. And so one of the things, would you normally have a stapler on your desk? Who would have a staple on their desk? Right. That would be essential. A staple remover? I have to have a staple remover. I've been driven nuts by staples. You've got to have a staple remover. He says, here's one of the other essentials. You've got to have a labeler. Mm-hmm. You've got to have one of these things that spits out labels. And you have a hand one. Brother does one. There's several of these things. But he says, why you need that is that you have an interesting article that you see in a magazine. It could be a Newsweek magazine or a Time magazine. You think, oh, that's terrific. There's an article on Russia. You think, I want that. I want that. So you rip it out. You think, well, where do I put it? So you grab a manila folder and you put label, Russia-economics, Russia-militarization, Russia-whatever. It doesn't matter, right? And then you put it in the folder, you put the label on, and you put it in the drawer. And if you can do that within 60 seconds, what happens is you are now mastering the disaster of paper that otherwise drowns you. And people end up with stuff on their desk. They think, I want to read that at some stage. And so they have their work and their reading files and everything all stacked up on their desk. And in the end, it's all out of control. So you've got to have a system whereby you could download an article and electronically file it immediately, or if you've got a physical piece of paper, you've got a mechanism for filing that instantly and quickly so that filing is actually fun. And another thing that he says is that don't get too complicated with your filing systems. He said, most people can have a filing cabinet that says A to Z, really complex stuff. A to Z, is that what you have over here? A to Z. It's A to Z. Is it A to Z in Canada?
A to Z
in Canada. A to Z in Canada. Good Canada, right? So he said, for most people it works because stuff actually can only be filed in so many places. The more complicated you make it, the more of a nightmare you make it trying to retrieve your own stuff. Don't make it complex. Now, you see, what's really good about this is imagine you buy a new cell phone. What happens with a cell phone? It comes in this little wee box. You unwrap the box, you toss all the stuff out, and there's a manual, cell phone manual, and a little warranty card. I mean, this is the sort of nightmare stuff that we have. What do you do with it? You file it. You file it. You think, I better keep that in case, you know, the, you know. So you file it. So you grab a manila folder. Now, what would you put on the label? You might put manual dash cell phone if you've got a whole bunch of manuals and you want to have them all in the same place. Or you'll put cell phone manual or mobile manual or whatever, and then you file it. Now, what he says is it doesn't matter how you file it, because imagine you want to retrieve it later on. Where would you look?
First place you think.
Okay, so you'd look under C for cell phone. It's not there. Where would you look? Yeah. Under M for manual, not there. Where would you look? M for mobile? Ah, it's there. Why did I put it there? Dumkopf. But the thing is, it'll only be in about three or four places and you'll track it down. Don't get any more complicated than that. Most people can have one single filing system that just chucks everything away from A to Z. You'll find it, don't worry. But the main thing is it's gone from your desk, gone from your head. One of his main theses is, and I think he's absolutely right, and think about this in terms of Bible study, he says the human brain is appalling in terms of running to-do lists. But it's fantastic in terms of creative thinking. So get everything out of your head that's all to do with stuff you're supposed to do in to-do lists and get it down in a physical form somewhere. So good and so comprehensive that you can trust that list that it's got everything that you need to do in your life. Figure out a way to start downloading it onto a physical list. And when you know that your list has got everything you've got to do, your brain goes, ah. And then all of a sudden it starts to think of much more interesting things in a creative way because you've got all the junk out of it, which is all the to-do stuff. Now, I think that's very helpful even for Christadelphians. So that's a slight digression. But coming back to Libronics then, one of the key things is that we have to have a good mechanism for filing stuff, and having said that, we also need to realise that one of the key things about this is that whilst it's going to give us a marvellous set of cross-references... Hi there.
How are you doing?
How are you? Come in. While it's going to give us a marvellous set of cross-references to a variety of different writings of the Brotherhood, you're still going to have to read them and digest them and decide what you want to keep, what you want to file, what you don't want to keep. Now, that's good because you've got to work at it. One of the reasons why I think that's good is, did I mention about good plagiarism and last plagiarism last time? I think I did, didn't I? Is that good plagiarism is where we have read the stuff, thought about it for ourselves, fed it back into our own study program, and reaffirmed finally that what Brother Thomas said was right, but that we can prove it for ourselves. That's good plagiarism. You've now taken possession of those ideas for yourself. So I just think that that's a terrific resource. Libronics, because it drives you back to the writings of our own community. And frankly, you'll get far more value spending time in that than you will going onto Google. So if you haven't got it, I recommend that you buy it because I think it's worth its weight in gold, plus the one from the testimony. So that's what you might call physical research places. Now, then there's another layer beyond this, which is audio, all right? Did you have your hand up, Tony? Okay, so that's good advice. So, if in the case of Apple, have you got Libronics,
yeah.
Jason? Okay. Okay, so you know you can do that now? So I run Libronics on Apple. They had a beta version, but they eventually launched an Apple's version not all that long ago. All you needed to do was download the basic engine, which was US$59. Yeah, they charged me to download that. But as a result of that, you could then run the whole thing. So that's pretty useful.
So
Yes, you've got to buy the engine.
And then you
have a Mac.
It's a program. It's not online.
It's a program. You're buying the program to install on your computer.
So it's a software program.
Yeah.
You install.
Yeah. Yes.
But you buy the Christelphian content separately.
Yes.
And then install that.
Yes. Yes. Correct.
So it's not constantly expanding.
No.
It's stationary.
That's correct. Yeah. But that Christadelphian contact was formatted to the Libronics engine, if you like, so that it would run on that program. That's the program they decided to format that Christadelphian stuff to.
Libronics does also have continuing books that they sell of their own, which you can buy. So it is an ever-expanding system.
Good point. So it's not expanding in terms of the Christadelphian discs. But remember I said every time you open it, you get all these other offers of stuff available, including Tyndale, for example. Those sorts of offers via Libronics are arriving all the time. Yep. And so occasionally you might want to add something, but you want to beware because you could spend an awful lot of money for not a lot of good. So you'd want to be selective. Okay.
Sorry, where do you purchase the discs? Like, how do you...
The Christadelphian ones?
Yeah.
You source those from the Christadelphian office. If you go to the Christadelphian office shop online, you can order them online, and there's a section there called MP3 and...
Tom also sells them.
Yeah. Tom Graham sells them. Okay. All right. So Tom Graham, who's at... Thousand Oaks. Yeah. But just as easy to order from the Christadelphian office online, and they email them over and... send them straight home. Now, that's documentary electronic research. The next layer up or down, depending on which way you want to travel, is auditory or audio. And there's obviously a set of websites for this, aren't there? Anyone know what the key websites are? Okay, so let's just make a note for those that haven't come across all of these. So we've got the Christadelphian Vault. I better do this so that I'm still in the good books. So there's a really good one called... Is that right, Josh?
Yeah.
Bible Talks for You, okay, which is the website that Josh runs, Josh McInturf from Granite State Ecclesia. There's also the Livonia... what's it called?
Livonia
Tape Library. There's also what's that brother's name in the UK? Carl
Hinton.
Carl Hinton, what's his one?
If you go to either Livonia or Bible Talks, there's usually a link for other sites, and both are pretty good links for other.
Yeah. I can't remember, but there's one in the UK which is Carl Hinton, and he claims to have 10,000 talks on his site, but I haven't sort of checked that out. Now, obviously, the critical thing with these is, again, why do I like that? Because it's taking you back into the talks of the Brotherhood. This is the talks that our Brotherhood have given on the subject. So it may not be an article that's written, but it might be a talk that's been given that's incredibly useful. But again, how will you unlock the power of that talk? You've got to listen to it. You've got to spend the time. So one of the things that comes out of this is don't ever think that computers are going to make Bible study quicker. They're not. You've still got to do the work, you know, in order for Bible study to be effective. Now, it just so happens that I have a resource here as well, which I have available at a very, very reasonable price, only for selected people such as attendees of the School of the Prophets. You've arrived just in the nick of time. One day later and it'll be all over, you know. So this particular CD, the reason why I'm mentioning this is you can't download this from any of those four sites. You can't download this from any site. This is it was a fundraiser for Rathmines Bible School, and it's actually a collection of Percy Mansfield's studies that were done at the Rathmines Bible School. Every talk he ever gave at the Bible School, all 111 of them, And that resource is now it was Perse Mansfield that fired up John Martin, got John Martin cracking on Bible study, got John Knowles cracking on Bible study, got John Ullman cracking on Bible study, got David Evans and Paul Creswell and a whole bunch of guys cracking on Bible study. So Uncle Perse was really the start of that drive into serious Bible study in Adelaide, you know, a long time ago. And this is all the talks he ever gave at Rathmines. Now, for US$35, I can sell you one of those. And so I just happen to have bought some here because I knew that you'd be interested in this since we had this topic on how to research Bible study. And the beauty of this one is that this is, again, a dedicated resource you can't get from anywhere else. So I've got some here. If you're interested, please feel free to see me. We may want to coordinate that through one source or something. I'm not sure how best to do this, rather than having individual people come up. I think I've bought 20 over, so we may want to talk afterwards in terms of how you want to manage that, whether you'd like to take the 20 and sell as many as... Have we got 20 people here? But, you know, even if not everyone here wants one, I'm sure that other people back in Reseda or Thousand Oaks might want to grab one as well, because you won't see this anywhere else. It's unique. I don't think you've seen that.
We'll buy the 20 and then we'll
I don't. You haven't seen that. You haven't seen that over here, have you?
No.
No. Okay.
Thousand Oaks Library has them.
Okay. Thousand Oaks Library has them.
$25 US.
Okay. What price in Thousand Oaks? Do you know?
52.
Is it 52? Is it Neil? Okay. So. Okay. All right. So. Anyway, you can think about that later. So, how are we going for time? 9:15. We should be going to 10:45. We should be going to 10:45. I've probably really said everything I wanted to say in terms of how to select and research, in as much as clearly we're moving into more of a digital and electronic world, aren't we? So rather than spending this session on library books, I thought it was better to spend time on electronic resources and talking about how we might access those and use those. And so again, the reason why I like Libronix and the reason why I like these sorts of sources is you will still have to do the work to extract the value. If you download 15 studies... 20 if you like, because they're on the subject that you're studying, you've just set yourself the task of 20 hours of listening just to process that material to see whether it's useful for your purposes. If you're prepared to commit to that, I think there'll be a blessing in that, a huge blessing, because you've committed, you know, the time necessary for that Bible study.
And that's a good point as far as what you've been saying, that in the end, you have to be willing to do it.
That's right.
It doesn't matter whether you do the books or this. So this makes an aspect of it quicker.
Yeah, that's right.
But in the end, you have to be willing to put in the time if you want something out of it, right?
Yep.
You can't escape that. That's what I'm trying to say. It's because it's electronic and you can't get out from under that. We live in a society that's trying to do that, right? Get that shortcut.
That's right.
Everything in a double click. I need to do an exhortation 3 weeks and I'll double click on something. You know.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't do it.
Yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Everything in the form of Bible study requires time and thought. So look, what I think we might do is, can we break for morning tea sort of early and break now? And then we'll reconvene at 10:30 rather than 11 o'clock. And we'll start on the next section, which is on how to develop and organise Bible study themes.